first among the two.
Giveaway, you dispose.
All right. Samina Yasmin will speak
you
to you.
Speak from here?
As you wish. That's as you wish. Will speak to us on Muslim minorities in non-Muslim states.
Thank you very much. It's really my great pleasure to be here and to share my ideas, and I'm glad that Ambassador Leahy actually started off by talking about my area of not specialization but interest, which is foreign policy. And the other area which connects up with Muslim identities in the West, with particular reference to Australia. So what I'm going to talk about is really my understanding of how Muslim minorities in Australia play a role or not play a role in Australian foreign policy with reference to issues that impact on Muslims overseas or even domestically. And I guess when I'm doing that, it's really guided by two main concerns of my research. One is that how does the nature of the regime or the rules and understandings that the state or the regime applies to itself or is constructed on the basis of shape the way views of most of the citizens are taken into account in shaping the foreign policies of those countries. That question, I think, is really guided by my other research, which suggests that when the nature of the regime changes, the way the regime approaches certain issues also starts changing. And in case of Pakistan, my country of origin, basically it's very apparent that as the regime started becoming more Islamic, the way foreign policy was conducted, at least at some declared level, started bringing in religious elements into it as well. Now, the way the religious element was brought in was different at some stages. It was to show that Pakistan was really an Islamic country. And then at other stages, for example, during President Musharraf's time, it was used to show that Pakistan was on the path of enlightened moderation. Now, I don't know if somebody has to tell me whether it's the expression is logical or not, but that's not what I'm going to focus on. So the first thing is that I think the nature of the regime changes or determines the way states integrate their view and shape their foreign policy. The second aspect of my talk really is in relationship to the question of multiculturalism. And again, I think when we talk about multiculturalism, often it's assumed that multiculturalism is a reality for Western liberal societies. But having grown up in Pakistan and having been aware of many different ethnic communities living together, I think multiculturalism also, in my view, shapes the context in which foreign policies are determined. Now, let me focus on Australia so that I don't go on giving you more details about my view of what multiculturalism in Muslim-majority states can do. I think in case of Australia, from the 1970s onwards, multiculturalism has been acknowledged as part of Australian identity for a number of reasons, because once the White Australia policy came to an end, after that the Australian government opened its borders for citizens from different places, and the number of those people has really continued to increase. From the 1990s onwards, the number has increased even further, and if we are to look at the ethnic composition or the national origin of migrants in Australia more recently, some of the major communities or nationalities identified include Indians, Chinese, and it will come back to me. It's that I can see the name on my head, but I'm not going to talk about that. But Ireland, sorry, thank you. Now, these communities are not necessarily religious communities. They are there mainly because in economic development terms, Western Australia is very significant, so a lot of them are coming there as temporary residents. But that's part of the whole story of multiculturalism in Australia. If we look at the way multicultural identity evolved in Australia, what we also find is that from the 1970s onwards, the number of Muslim population or Muslim migration in Australia has also increased. Currently, according to the 2011 census, The total number of Muslims in Australia is just close to 500,000, which when I talk about that and I think when we compare it to other Western liberal societies, it seems like a very tiny number, 2.2% of the total population. But I guess in a current environment, when we talk about Muslim minorities and living in Western liberal societies, the question becomes very significant as to the extent to which this minority, which in lots of ways is attracting a lot of attention, shapes or doesn't shape Australian foreign policy. And that's really the question I'm going to ask and say, the fact that Muslims in Australia are 2.2%, their numbers have increased, they come from more than 80 different countries, including from Africa, Middle East, South Asia, Southeast Asia. Some of them also come from Western countries, even from Britain they'd come into Australia. The fact that they're all these Muslim different nationalities, are they a factor in shaping how Australia relates to the world? And then I hope at the end of my presentation I can link that to the question of multiculturalism. I would divide the nature of influence that Muslim communities exert, and I'm consciously using the word communities rather than community, into three different categories. I think at one level, Muslim communities have been irrelevant or of very little significance in determining how Australia is related to the outside world. And there are a number of examples of those cases. Prior to 9/11, the Gulf crisis of 1991 was one where Australian government, in fact, decided to help participate in the Operation Desert Storm. And in its decision to go ahead, even though there were some groups within Australia, Muslim groups, who were not supportive of that, Australian government didn't really take that into account, and the decision was to be involved in that. But I think more recently, after 9/11, the decision of the Australian government to support the American decision to go into Afghanistan as a result of 9/11, and then after that to invade Iraq as a coalition of willing partners, Australian government decided to go ahead and participate in these conflicts despite the fact that there were Muslims, or at least sections of Muslim communities who were very critical of this decision. And again, similar to other situations, for example, in Britain, Muslims were not the only community or the part of the citizenship community that was against that, but I think since I'm looking at the Muslim impact on foreign policy, it stands out that Muslim voices were unable to be heard in the shaping of Australian foreign policy on these issues. Now, it doesn't mean that Muslim voices weren't given the space, but I think there was a difference between being given the space and then being actually incorporated into the foreign policy. There's some very significant analysts of Muslim background in Australia who were able to come and say exactly what they wanted, for example, on Afghanistan issue. But ultimately, the policy decisions were taken independent of what the Muslim population was saying. The second category is one where I think religion or Muslim communities, religious identities have been relevant but only partially relevant. And when I say only partially relevant, I think what stands out in my mind is that there have been issues in foreign policy realm where communities that come from Muslim background have chosen not only for their religious identity reasons, but also because there are other factors to take a certain position. In some cases, they have been significant enough for the government to take that into account. In other cases, their relevance has been very marginal. But let me talk about the cases in which I think they have been slightly significant in shaping the way Australian government responded. One of the earlier examples of that is the 2006 Israeli invasion of Lebanon, in which a number of countries had to evacuate their minority or their communities from Lebanon. What was interesting was, and I'm sure there are panels in other countries as well, that there was a whole community of migrants, not just simply Muslims, but Lebanese migrants, both Muslim and non-Muslim, who had migrated to Australia, and so they are part of that large Lebanese community in Australia. then, having acquired the passport there, decided to go back into Lebanon and live there. So I call them like double diasporic identities. So the fact that they were in Lebanon and the fact that the Australian government had evacuated citizens really raised the question as to what are their rights as citizens to be treated in the same way as other citizens who were there but did not have this double diasporic identity. Ultimately, I think the Australian government managed to take out most of them, but the fact that at that stage some people were raising the question that they had equal right compared to others was not necessarily couched only in religious terms. In fact, it was couched more in ethnic terms, plus some reference to the religious identity. Where it becomes even more interesting, and I think it's interesting but quite a sad story, is the question of the treatment of religious minorities in the Indian Ocean region and how some of those minorities have been able to use the situation, and I'm not saying that it's a negative sense, but to use it to shape Australian foreign policy. And the example that I would like to use is the question of the treatment of Hazaras in Afghanistan and Pakistan. What we find is that as the sectarian violence increased in Pakistan and as Taliban started being very unfair to Hazara minorities, a number of Hazaras have used different routes to go into Australia. Again, I don't know how much it gets airtime in other countries, but in case of Australia, the position of asylum seekers dominates the way Australian government tries to show its commitment to certain ideas or not. And what we find is that in case of Hazaras, two things, I think, in terms of Australian foreign policy stand out. One is that Australian government has gone through different phases in terms of how it's dealt with its asylum seekers policy or how to deal with them. But while it has been modifying its policy and trying different options, what I'm more interested in is the way in which Hazara community within Australia has decided to use what is happening overseas in terms of exploitation or sectarian violence against Hazaras and how they have become, in fact, minor players, or some would argue even very significant players, but I think the situation is still not that obvious, minor players in shaping the way Australian government has decided on the issue, not simply asylum seekers in general, but specifically vis-a-vis the Hazara minorities. What do I mean by that? I think within the Australian setup, most of the migrants, Muslim migrants who came from Afghanistan, traditionally were not of Hazara background. But as the wave of asylum seekers started in Australia, the number of Hazara migrants has started increasing. Most of them come as asylum seekers. And what we find, what's very interesting if we start observing the way they've organized themselves, that unlike, say, even the 20 years ago when Muslims were congregating into mosques just as Muslims without any sectarian identification, now the Hazara organizations have started becoming more specific in terms of their Shia identity, and they have also started forming Hazara groups that more or less lobby for the case of the Hazaras to be given protection. They have also demanded and have been successful in getting their language recognized as a specific language. Effectively, therefore, I think the role that these Hazara community within Australia who have already got citizenship played is one which is, I think, shows that they can have some role in shaping the foreign policy of Australian government. Now, Chair, before I continue, do I have another 10 minutes or?
Seven.
Okay, so I'll be very quick because I could sense that there was slight movement on this end. Well, it helps to for an all-female panel to actually pick them up. Okay, what are the areas in which I think the Muslim migration or Muslim citizenship has really become a positive force in terms of Australian foreign policy? I would identify the interfaith dialogue space as being one in which Australian government has focused a lot, not just simply in terms of telling the regional countries, and remember Australia shares a similar geographic area, not the borders, with one of the largest, in fact, the largest Muslim country in Indonesia. But when we move further west, including Malaysia, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Iran, and as we go further, I think the number of Muslim population in Australia's vicinity is definitely greater than a lot of other Western liberal societies could talk about. Australian government has relied on interfaith dialogue since 9/11 as a way of engaging the regional countries. It's not the only platform on which Australian foreign policy has been conducted, but it's one component that Australian government has really focused on. And in that effort, I think what we see, something which is also present in other countries, is the engagement of diasporic minorities, religious minorities, as a way of telling regional countries that Australia values its Muslim minority, but at the same time is also able to use them in terms of establishing links with other communities. I think as Australia has moved into recognizing that Australia is living in the Asian century, this focus on religious identification is going to create more, together more attention. So far what I've said is that Australia, I'm looking at the role of Muslim minority as a factor in shaping Australian foreign policy. I think we can't get away from the fact that as minorities in a globalized world, Muslim minorities in Australia are also impacted by international environment. So in that sense, they indirectly are also becoming agents. One, obviously, Islamophobia has created a sense, not across the Muslim community, but among significant number of Muslims, that the world out there is different and it doesn't accept Muslims, and it has created the condition which was the basis of the report that I wrote, that even though there is an absolute exclusion on the part of the community, it has contributed to a sense of a relative exclusion of Muslims from the whole community. I think Muslims, therefore, within Australia, having been exposed to what some people refer to as the deterritorialized religious identity and the fear of Islam as the other, have really started developing this sense of being in Australia but not necessarily being part of the space. Another element which I think has been slowly emerging, in which Muslims in Australia, but I would argue can be seen in other areas as well, are subjected to what I refer to as the spatially distant trauma. Their relatives, as diasporic communities, they have relatives, friends, people that they know in their countries of origin. And given the fact that a number of these countries are going through very traumatic times, even though they don't directly get affected, the news of suicide bombing, for example, ends up impacting on these people in a way that I think we need to think about. Would that impact on Australian foreign policy in the long term or not? I think the test would really be in the long term, but it's a trend that I think we need to be very aware of. Last few comments. Since I started with the fact that the nature of the regime determines how foreign policies are followed, and at the same time the nature of multiculturalism in Australia, what is it that I see this situation? I think at one level what I could argue is that the nature of the Australian state, being more secular than I think I'm beginning to realize is the case in, and I hope I'm not going to be shot down for saying that, more a case of than, say, in the States and even in Canada, there's a less emphasis on religion in the whole society. So I think in that sense, the nature of not just simply the regime, but the society has really limited the role that Muslims have been able to play in the Australian foreign policy as Muslims. And that's why they've brought in their other ethnic identities and other identities into the play. But I think what's more interesting is that how this international situation is really shaping Muslim relationship to the multicultural identity. At one level, the global idea of Islamophobia is really creating a sense of Muslim exclusion. That, I think, undermines the real success of multiculturalism if it is not constantly countered. To give the Australian present government the credit, I think it's taken a lot of effort to ensure the Muslim population is constantly recognized in that capacity, that they are equal citizens. But given, I think if we look at the way things have changed in Australia, even in the last 12 years, it cannot be taken as given. So my point would be that unless and until this trend towards ensuring that the global environment is not allowed to drastically impact on how Muslims feel as citizens in Australia, we run the risk of creating another subclass of citizens who are citizens but do not feel that they're equal citizens. But I think there's another side of that story, which is that if we don't do that, in the long term, the fact that this subclass of citizens might emerge also runs the risk of moving into that space, which is the militant space. And I think in that case, Australian foreign policy would get even more complicated in terms of its relationship with Muslim minorities. So far, the picture is quite simple. So far, the picture can be easily identified. But I think given the fact that Australia is a country of the Indian Ocean region, in close proximity to Southeast Asia, South Asia, and the Middle East, unless and until that trend is countered, I think the long-term situation may be very different. And I think before my chair tells me to stop, I'm going to stop it here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You've raised quite a few questions, I think.